Off the Ball, GAA.
I actually text Tommy Rooney for tips on how to start a podcast. I was pricing ayahuasca retreats, so I think for the safety of everybody, it's better off just to throw all the headspace into an intercounty game.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
On episode 2 of Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors podcast, the stories behind the transfers that almost happened but just about didn't. Focuses on one of the greatest of all time, Pelé.
Pelé. Baba, back to Pelé. Now what's he going to do? He's got the third! Oh, beautiful goal!
And how the Santos superstar nearly swapped Brazil for Hanover. And how a Nazi ice machine salesman nearly pulled the deal off. Dropping in your OTB football podcast feed this Monday. Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in Mike Hankey, and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.
Hello, hello. Happy Thursday and welcome back to another episode of Word on the Street, where usually we take a trending sporting topic, something that is dominating the headlines, and we take it to the public. But instead, this week, we've taken a trending sporting topic and invited the kind of subject of it into the studio. So obviously, I'm here in the host chair. Susanna is around Paris for the Six Nations, just casually chatting with Antoine Dupont and all those lads. Rachel is here beside me, as always. How are you, Rachel?
Great, thanks, Eve. How are you?
I'm good. And we are joined, very excited to be joined by Owen Jennings.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
No problem. How was your journey in today? I know the weather warnings outside aren't exactly the nicest.
No, they weren't. So I had to get up early this morning, got the 7:15 train up here. And yeah, got into Houston about 10:30 and got the bus over.
That's dedication. Thank you very much. But it's not the longest journey you've done recently. So for people who don't know, Owen, you are just arrived back recently enough from Australia where you were competing in the Junior Australian Open. When did you get back?
So I got back last Monday. So it's kind of a long flight. It's 12 hours and another 9 hours.
Oof.
So it takes a few days to kind of get the body clock back working again.
So, I mean, this was probably a whirlwind experience. It was your first ever Junior Grand Slam. And I think, is it the first Irish player who's been represented at the Australian Open Juniors since, I think, 2022?
I think 2020. I think Amar Elamin was the last person who played the qualifiers.
Oh, nice.
And then Simon Carr played it in 2017. But
yeah.
He played the main draw.
Oh, yeah. I was reading that. We were chatting to Amar actually over the summer at out in the Irish Open. And it seems like a really vibrant environment for young Irish tennis. Mm. And so to go over to Australia to compete in this,
yeah.
how did you find out, I suppose, that you had made the draw?
It was all very much like last second.
Really?
I actually remember it was like 5 minutes before the withdrawal deadline.
Oh, wow.
And I was like six places out and I was on the phone with my coach being like, do I risk it? Do I stay in it or do I pull out? And then with a minute to go, I had moved up another four or five places. So I was one or two out. So I decided to risk it. And this is all kind of like a week before.
Oh.
So, and then yeah, a couple of hours later, I found out I got in. And later that day, then I booked flights for literally the following day and got over there. Yeah.
And is that typical, that kind of very last minute?
It can be with those ITFs, yeah. That's very normal. Unless your ranking is high enough that you know you're going to get in. Mm. But if you're on the verges, it can always be very much last second.
Is that all happening in the middle of the night as well here? Because is it happening like at Australia
time?
Actually,
it was middle of the day here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just add to the excitement a little bit.
Yeah. So what's the kind of process like when you're qualifying for a kind of a junior grand slam? Is it the points that you're building up along the tour throughout the year?
So it's all based off ranking and ranking points. So, I mean, I started with 0 points this time last year.
Wow.
Yeah, so I kind of bagged the idea, actually, of trying to go play slams because I was just back from injury. I didn't even think my level was there. Mm. So I kind of started off playing J30s here in Ireland, which in fairness to Tennis Ireland, they've put on a lot of international tournaments here. Mm-hmm. So which has given the opportunity, given players like myself the opportunity to play these tournaments and to get the exposure and to get points. So I decided I'd just play the ones kind of here in Ireland and see how we do. Not putting any pressure on myself or anything. And then I actually ended up winning a few of them. And then I kind of gradually started playing the higher level events, and the last few months started playing the even higher ones again to get to where I am now. Yeah.
Because I think I was reading that you had, is it 5 singles titles in the last kind of year?
Yeah, so it was funny. Like I started off with the lowest grade. So there's 7 grades.
Yes.
You start off with J30s, mm-hmm. and then you have J60s, J100s, J200s, J300s, J500s, and then you have the Grand Slams. So the ones here in Ireland, they're all J30s. Mm. So I started off with them, and I think I won 5 of my first 6 ones.
Oh,
so
wow.
I haven't won one since. So I started off quite strong. But then as you go up the higher the levels, it's obviously more difficult to win the tournaments then.
Is that really important for you, do you think, just getting the confidence back after being off injured for a year?
Definitely, like, but more so points-wise. So the points give you kind of a ranking, and then you can build on that throughout the year. So just give me a base to work off, really.
And do your any kind of titles or matches that you win in doubles, does that translate to your singles points as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, so doubles is funny. So say you for J30, for example, you get 30 points if you win singles. Mm-hmm. And for doubles, you get 25, but then you divide it by 4. So it's okay. Not as much. Well, it's nowhere near as much. But it does add on to your singles. So, I mean, they do matter as you go up. Yeah, definitely.
And I'm sure you felt they mattered a hell of a lot when you kind of got that slot to be able to qualify across Australia. Rachel, you were doing some research into the kind of this, like your experience of suddenly having to go. Did you have your visa booked, pre-booked?
Yeah, so I kind of things planned just in case. So I had my visas from a few days before. So I had it all kind of sorted to go just in case. I wasn't sure if I was going to go or not. But then luckily I got in the end.
I suppose, how do you get yourself then into the mind frame of you don't know if you're going and all of a sudden you get to go, but it's at the other side of the world? Yeah. Like, you know, it's a pretty quick turnaround.
It is, I suppose. Look, I was kind of ready to go. So I was kind of in the mindset of going and being there, but I wasn't 100% sure. But look, when you get there, you know, you try to acclimatize as much as you can, get used to the balls, get used to the courts, just conditions. And yeah, look, I played my first match and I remember I was 5 love down in the first set. And I remember going back to the court to my coach being like, what do I do? What do I do? Panicking completely. And I was thinking to myself, there's no way I've come halfway across the world to not win a game. So I took like a 3-minute toilet break, came back out, started playing a bit better, and I got through my first match then in the end.
The Iga Świątek method. Because I wanted to ask you about this first slam, because we were the first match.
Yeah.
Because we were watching kind of obviously not live, it was middle of the night for us, but we were kind of keeping up with it, and we saw, you know, the 6-love for the first set. To come back from that to kind of in your first ever Grand Slam appearance, mentally, how tough was that to kind of say to yourself, okay, this set is done, it doesn't matter, and now I'm going to go on?
Yeah, look, I was able to kind of forget about the fact that it was a junior slam because the qualifiers are actually 2.5 hours outside of Melbourne Park.
Okay.
So we arrived in Melbourne and we stayed there for the night when we got there. And then the next day we got a 2.5 hour train to where the qualifiers are held.
Where are they?
In a place called Traralgon, in a small town, kind of a while outside Melbourne. So you're really not part of the tournament until you get into main draw.
Okay.
So, yeah, look, you were able to kind of distance yourself from the fact that it was a junior slam, which in a way was nice to get yourself into it. But yeah, after the first set, like I was panicking. some of my goals very much changed. Like I was coming out in the second set being like, my goal now is to get one game.
Yeah. I think Rafa Nadal, he once talked about, you know, every point you reset, you know, you're starting basically from scratch.
And I think, look, that's the difference between the very, very top guys and the guys kind of below them. It's not like if you watch two guys hitting with each other, you're not going to be able to tell who's better.
Yeah.
Like you're not. But it's just the mental in the big moments, who plays the bigger moments better is kind of what separates the best players from the not as good ones.
How important is your coach in those kind of instances? Because obviously you can't really communicate with them.
You actually can now.
Okay.
Yeah. They're allowing coaching now at all these tournaments.
Okay.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
But just to have someone there to support, like, it's quite a lonely sport. Mm. I mean, I know guys kind of around the 1,000 ATP mark. Like, they all travel by themselves. There, it's lonely. Like, so it's really nice to have a coach there, or just someone there, just giving you a bit of support. And there was two Irish lads actually that were very sound to come over and watch my match there as well. So, which is nice as well. It just gives you a bit of extra support during throughout the match. Yeah.
And how long have you worked with your coach? Mm.
So I've been working with him since I've been about 7 or 8, I'd say.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so yeah. I've been working with him a long time. Yeah.
So you'd know, kind of, he'd know your game inside and out.
Yeah, he would. And he knows how to work with me and what works for me and what doesn't. Like, every player is slightly different. What I might need is completely different to what someone else might need.
Exactly. And so for then your second match, which was against a Greek opponent whose name I'm going to try and pronounce, Adeasis Galardis.
Yeah.
This was, again, like a tight match. Did it feel more kind of close-knit than the first one? Even though you didn't win, did it feel like more of a competition?
Not really. It was kind of similar match to the... Sorry. It was similar match to the first match in terms of I didn't play a great first set, to be honest, in this one. I came back and then I had all the momentum going into the third set. But then my focus just dropped. I started kind of imagining myself in Melbourne Park playing that first round. And then all of a sudden, he has all the momentum. He's back playing and he played a really good third set. So, I mean, like, the momentum just changes so quickly.
You learn a lot from that, though, I suppose, wouldn't you? You know, you always want to come out with a win, but, you know, that old saying, like, you know, if you don't win, you learn.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have to take something away from every match you play, win or lose. So, I mean, coming out of that tournament was definitely, yeah, focus. It needs to be something I need to kind of stay on in the next few matches and tournaments.
You got to hang around Melbourne Park, though, then after...
And then, yeah, actually, so if you win your first match in qualies, you can sign in as a lucky loser. So I was actually able to get some accreditation to go around the park. And look, you're in with all the pro players. And look, that's really where you need to be, because those are the guys you eventually want to start competing with. And just when you see them on TV, you kind of put them up on a bit of a pedestal and you think they're like gods and they're not human. So to be around them, it really kind of humanizes them, which I think is really important if you want to be competing against them and playing against them.
And 100%. Mm. Like, who would be your tennis heroes that are kind of operating right now that you want to play against?
So I suppose, like, I don't watch a whole lot of tennis, funny enough.
Okay.
I watch the odd match or something if I'm home and I have nothing else to do, but I wouldn't be a avid, I suppose, tennis watcher. But if I had to pick one, I'd have to be Alcaraz at the moment. He's just doing so much at the moment. Yeah.
So, I mean, did you get a chance to watch that kind of that semi-final especially and then the final?
No, actually, I was only there for the Friday, Saturday and Sunday because that's when my accreditation ran out.
Okay.
So I had to go home after those few days. So I did see a few pros, but I was mainly watching the juniors because I know a lot of them and stuff as well, so...
Is it a kind of a close-knit community on tour? Are you seeing players now that you've, you know, you're kind of, what, 4 or 5 years onto being on this circuit that you recognise and you're playing against them very frequently?
Yeah, so I suppose, like, if you're lower down the ranks, you're not, because there's so many more tournaments for that kind of level. So you don't really get to know any of the guys, but once you're kind of in the 100, top 100 mark, it's all the same guys over and over and over and over again, because you're all playing the same tournaments. They're all at the slams, they're all at the big level ones. So yeah, you do get to know the guys you're playing.
I think Conor Nyland's book, The Racket, everyone I know in the office has read it, and a lot of people, it probably opened their eyes to how lonely life can be on the road as a tennis pro, because when you hear a professional sports person, you just think they live the life. They potter around to these tournaments, and they train hard, but is that kind of what it's like when you see...
It is not for me, to be honest, at the moment, because, you know, in fairness, I've been very lucky. There's been a few guys very generous financially who've given me a lot of support in the last year, especially. And look, tennis is really, really expensive. Like, when you're traveling, I think the Australia trip cost, I think, upwards of 10 grand or something, flights, accommodation and everything.
Wow.
So Tennis Ireland were very good, so they can pay for a bit of that. But then a bit, you obviously have to cover yourself as well.
Mm.
So, and I mean, most like Australia is a bit of an exception.
Yeah.
But most weeks will cost between about 2,000 and 4,000, which is expensive. And as a pro player kind of trying to break in where you're not making much money, you don't have the money to be bringing people with you. So you're up there by yourself. You're trying to do everything you can to save money. You're staying in offside hotels, trying to just wash your own clothes, that, all that kind of sort of stuff. So it is quite lonely at that level. But then for someone like me, I can afford to bring someone along with me. And so it doesn't make it, makes it much, much easier. And so it's not too bad for me at the moment.
So kind of we're speaking about, like, Melbourne is so far away, but the next two junior Grand Slams a lot closer to home. What would be kind of your goals now for the next kind of couple of months coming back from this?
Yeah, so Melbourne, so the Australia Open is slightly easier to get in just because of how far away it is.
Okay.
So not all the top lads will go to it, but everyone will play the French and everyone will play Wimbledon because it's closer and they're probably just a bit bigger. So I wouldn't make the cut as where I am right now. So basically what I'm trying to do is I'm going to try to play a few more tournaments between now and then and hopefully get myself into the qualifiers of both of them. That would be the goal.
It's very much you're building on now this momentum.
Completely, yeah.
So what's your, I know you were saying to us before we started recording that you're heading off somewhere exciting tomorrow.
Yeah, so I'm going to the Dominican Republic for 2 weeks.
Wow. It's nice. It's. I don't think it's going to be a weather rain warning in the Dominican Republic.
No.
No, definitely not.
Is that for like a training camp or a tournament?
Two tournaments, so two J200s. So I'd be looking to do decent in them to get the points that I need for French and then Wimbledon. Yeah.
So what does your, I suppose, training schedule look like? I mean, you're from Mayo.
Yeah.
Do you spend a lot of time in Dublin training? How is it trying to manage like a burgeoning career being from the west of the country? Because I know that so many facilities are in Dublin.
Yeah. I mean, it is tough in that sense coming from the west. So I'm very lucky actually to have Daniel Glancy. He's a former pro. He was about 700 and he's moved back to Castlebar. So I can now hit with him once or twice a week. And then, yeah, on the weekends, I'm up here Friday, Saturday, rotating between people's houses. So that's kind of where I'm training at the moment. So when I come up here, I'd be in DCU.
Okay.
In National Tennis Centre, there for a few hours on Friday, a few hours on Saturday, and then I try to get into Fitzwilliam. Then on as well on the weekend. Yeah.
I think Suzanne is a big fan of playing paddle and Fitz, right, our other co-host who's not here at the moment, but yeah, keep an eye out for her the next time you're there. And then you're only in fifth year.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Which is
It's hard to manage school at the moment. So I think I actually looked at my attendance a few days ago and it's my highest attendance class is like under 52%.
Do you know what? I thought you were going to say a lot lower. That's actually quite impressive.
Yeah, your win rate is above that, and that's all that happens at the moment, isn't it?
So I'd say teachers were saying I was taking the piss of it for the first few months,
And then they see you in Australia, and they're
exactly.
like, okay.
I think people kind of understood that I wasn't completely Dawson when they found out about Australia Open, and yeah, look, I mean, I think as a sport, tennis isn't that big in the West of Ireland, especially in the West of Ireland. In Ireland, it's not that big, but I think it's even less. It's more minority in the West. And yeah, it's not that, it's just people don't understand anything about tennis. Like a lad actually turned around to me the last day and goes, sure, isn't tennis the same as being like a ballerina or something? So I think that just shows...
Trying to see the logic there. Yeah. The point is that there is none.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that just shows where the viewpoint of tennis is at in the West. And look, I think that's down to the fact that the coverage of tennis isn't that big or that it doesn't get the recognition. But also that's no one else's fault except for Tennis in Ireland because there's nothing to cover. So hopefully in the next few years, there'll be more players playing at the biggest ages and get a bit more recognition.
I mean, because we were at the Irish Open kind of over the summer and there's such a passion for people who are involved in tennis in Ireland who want it to grow and who want it to be kind of, because it's such a popular sport, like people watch it a lot, but I feel like the fact that it's not played as widely, it's very much invisible.
Look, there's a lot of social players, so kind of older people in their 30s, 40s, 50s play like big numbers in Ireland, but at the performance level, it's very, very small. Like, there's only very few players. So, I mean, there's I think it's going in the right direction. So there's Patrick Breen, who's about 2 years younger than me, who's the highest ranked junior we've ever had.
Oh, wow.
I think he's like top 30 in the world for his own age, which is brilliant. Yeah. There's another guy, Zach Naughton, who's...
You play doubles with him.
I play doubles with him.
Yes.
And I travel to go out with him. And he was only just a few spaces off Australia. And then you've, you know, the guys are playing Davis Cup this weekend down in Limerick,
yes,
playing Syria. And they're all in their kind of early 20s and they all have pretty good rankings on the Pro Tour. And then we have really good kind of under 12s, under 14s, and even younger than that again. So I think definitely the next 2 years there'll be more tennis at the higher level. Yeah. And even on the kind of management side of it, there's, you know, James McGee, probably our second highest ranked ever tennis player. So he's moved home and he's looking to help out a bit as well. There's Dave Miley, who was head of Kazakhstan tennis, performance tennis, who still is.
Okay.
And he's done a phenomenal job over there. So they're really, really good internationally. He's moved back now and he's looking to help out a bit more as well. And then you have Keane Blake, the head of performance, who's always trying to look out for the players and who's always kind of just a phone call away trying to help. And Kevin Quinn then as well, CEO, he's doing a really good job of just promoting the sport, I think, in Ireland.
I think definitely we can see even that there's perhaps more opportunities than there was before, and that that will kind of breed a bit more success in a few more tournaments and international tournaments. Like for you, I think, I guess yourself, when did you switch from maybe as a kid playing it for fun or sport or whatever to taking it incredibly seriously?
Yes, I suppose I started when I was like 5 or 6 in the park tennis during the summer. And I kind of just got addicted to it, I suppose. I remember like I'd be waking up at 6:30 in the morning, banging the ball against the wall, waking my parents up.
Oh my God.
So from there, look, I started playing a bit more seriously, started playing a bit more. Started doing the groups in Castlebar and Westport, and then started just playing the kind of national tournaments under 12, under 14. I was always decent enough as a junior in Ireland. I would have played for Ireland a few times at Summer Cup, Winter Cups, Four Nations, all that kind of stuff. But then I got injured when I was about 15, so I was out for a year.
Where was the injury?
Stress fracture in the
back.
So, yeah, so that's when I came back and I bagged the idea of kind of playing these top events. But thanks to the tournaments put on in Ireland, basically, I was able to build a ranking to where I am now.
Yeah.
I think we hear a lot sometimes, especially with individual sports, that parents maybe push their kids too far. Like, you know, you see Andre Agassi in his book and like the Williams sisters. Seems to be the opposite for you. Your parents were kind of saying, calm down, calm down.
Completely. And, you know, I've always been really grateful for that, to be honest. It's always come from me. So my parents never, like if they try to tell me what to do, I do the opposite. So I never appreciated them telling me what to do. So, yeah, I mean, it did get to a point when I was like 11 or 12 where, you know, I was taking it way too seriously. I was putting way too much kind of pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And they were telling me to kind of maybe stop playing tennis. So, yeah, I mean, I got better as, because when you're that young, you know, you think it's everything and you think everyone's kind of watching you, but in reality, it doesn't matter at all if you win or lose, especially at that age.
Yeah, it's all a kind of building experience and building kind of a strength and kind of, especially like we were talking about this again before the show, and I'm sorry for stealing your questions, Rachel. But this is tennis the only sport you grew up playing?
No, so I would have played a lot of Gaelic and hurling, even up until about a year ago. So I would have played with my club in Westport.
Okay. Both Gaelic and hurling?
Both Gaelic and hurling, yeah. And then with the school then as well in Caspar.
Do you find that growing up playing Gaelic games as well helped with kind of, even something like hurling, hand-eye coordination, kind of your endurance?
It definitely helped for someone like me who probably didn't get enough on-court training from the tennis just because of the lack of people we have playing it. It was definitely helped physically for my tennis, yeah. But I also liked the kind of social side of it, you know, being in a team, and it kept me in contact with my friends because I'm away a lot as well, so I don't see them all the time either.
Yeah.
So when I was home, I did kind of enjoy that side of it as well.
How do you think Mayo will get on this year? Do you think it's finally going to be the year?
You know, they're starting off pretty well, but their team is very young. Very, very young. And so we'll see. never know.
We had to like give a great shout out to like the best headline I'd heard from one of the Mayo newspapers when you were going over to Australia, and it was just Mayo for Slam. I was just gutted I didn't come up with that myself, to be honest.
I know. So obviously Australia, to go back to Melbourne, Australia hard court surfaces.
Yeah.
Is that what you're playing even for the qualifiers? What's your favourite surface?
My favourite surface, my results have been the best on the kind of carpet.
Yes.
In Ireland.
Yeah,
that's nowhere else really in the world. So it's here in Ireland because of the weather. It's so wet. So it doesn't flood the courts basically when it rains. So, but it's not played on anywhere else in the world. You won't find them anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it is a disadvantage when you're going away and when you're growing up in this stuff. But at the moment in Ireland, they're trying to put a lot more in this artificial clay.
Yes, yeah. I've seen that in my local tennis club in Athlone. I think they're even artificial clay in Everett,
I mean, it's better than Savannah, but it's nothing like the real clay. But I mean, it's a start anyways, and it's the best we can do in Ireland.
Yeah.
So we'll take it.
So when you're playing now in the Dominican Republic, will that be on clay courts?
That's on real clay, yeah.
Real clay.
Yeah.
And can you remember like the first time that you played on real clay and how different it was?
I think first time I played on real clay was when I was under 12 or something in Spain. It's so physical.
Mm.
Clay is really, really physical. So whenever I go away to these kind of hot countries on clay, I always cramp. Like always, always cramp.
Yeah.
So we're just not used to playing those kind of longer rallies. It's slower, it's higher bouncing. Mm. It's just way more physical. So it was something I kind of always struggled with physically when I was going away.
And because I know you look at players like Alcaraz or like Nadal, who were brought up on tennis courts, and everyone would always bring up their kind of their strength and their endurance and how quick they have to get around the court and how they're able to do that. And how different tennis players from different countries will have these different styles. Mm. Do you find yourself looking at kind of different tennis players and saying, okay, I like what he's doing, I'll do a bit of that. Or I can't do this, it's not my style, I'll do something else.
Yeah, I mean, different things work for different people.
Mm.
So, I mean, you do take things from the best players because if it's working for them, why not try it yourself? But not everything they're doing will work for you either.
Yeah.
Everyone has slightly different technique. Everyone's game style is slightly different. I think a lot of the time in Ireland, we kind of play very, very defensively. And I'm not sure why that is, but it's the way the game is going. The guys are so fast. The guys hit the ball so hard that I think we need to develop into more of a bigger hitting game here in Ireland so that we can hit through guys a bit more.
I suppose looking forward now next year, most people will just be asking you what the plan is after the Leaving Cert, you know, what course you're going to do. But a question you could be posed with, are you looking to turn pro straight after? What's the plan?
I definitely don't think I'll go straight onto the pro circuit. I think I wouldn't be good enough, firstly, to make it straight out of juniors. Not many lads are at the moment because like the level in college tennis in America is seriously, seriously high.
Okay.
So there's a lot of guys now going college and then going pro, which seems to be kind of the only route unless you're kind of one in the world as a junior. So I think we'll see how the next kind of year or two goes, and then I'll make a decision on college. And then I kind of take it just year by year because your goals will change every year depending on where you are and how you're doing.
Would heading to the States be something that might appeal to you?
Yeah, I'm looking into it at the moment. Obviously, it depends on the college, on what kind of deal you're getting. Mm. So, I mean, I'll just see. Yeah.
Well, I suppose the good thing about being still 17 years old is that there's so much time to decide on kind of what you want to do. And having something like a Junior Grand Slam under your belt already, even having experienced that pressure surely is something that you're going to be able to carry with you.
Yeah, I think it's something I was definitely aiming for over the last few months. It was always in the back of my mind to play Australia firstly and then see if I could play the others. But I think, look, as I said, the pressure, I got a lot of support from back here, so which is always kind of added pressure. I got a lot of kind of attention and stuff from other people. So, I mean, it's really nice as well to get that from people and just to know that people care. Especially from my two local clubs, people are really like genuinely interested in how you're doing. Anytime I'm around the club, people are coming up to me, people are asking me how I'm doing, congratulating me, even if I lost the first round. Like, so it's nice to come home to that and to know people do care. Like, yeah.
And you ever worked with a sports psychologist?
Never, actually. It's something that I have been meaning to look into, because I know all the top guys do work with them, and it can actually get you over the line in some matches. Like that last match in the qualifiers for Australia, maybe had I been working with a sports psychologist, I would have got through. So it's definitely something I'm going to be looking into doing, yeah.
Did you, and we were again chatting before this about the kind of level of Irish support that was in Melbourne. Were you expecting that? I know everyone is jokes about how you know Melbourne is like an Irish enclave at this stage. But you could see that, you could feel that.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in Melbourne Park, like I said to you before, like every second person I walked by, I heard an Irish accent. So I mean, it was just flooded with Irish. So it was tough then as well, being there and not playing. Because I'd say the support would have been really, really big had I been playing. And it's also just tough watching the guy that beat you playing there as well, where you really wanted to play. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, we are going to wish you the very best of luck for your tournament in the Dominican Republic. Mm. Very best of luck for the next few kind of weeks and months as well as you go through your tournaments. And I'm sure this will not be the last that we're hearing of you. I'm probably not the last you're going to be in here chatting to us today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice and wish you the best of luck.
Thanks.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No!
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.